tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa buddham dhammam sangham namassami. Is my voice carry? Yeah? Okay. Well, welcome to Thailand. I get a lot of memories of the tropics when I feel this kind of humidity. I guess Sri Lanka. Steve, have you been in the tropics? No? Anyway, here we are. So it's actually very difficult to meditate when it's hot and sticky and you've had a nice lunch, because the mind wants to basically go to sleep or dreamy state. So why do it? And why sit here? Why not go for a canoe paddle or go for a snooze or whatever? Well, the development of mindfulness, I think, requires friction. And when you are faced with something like the hindrance of dullness, or when you're faced with something like an irritable person in your life, or you're faced with an anxious situation which you're going to have to deal with, or you're faced with something, with sickness or with death or anything that doesn't fulfill your desires, you have to put effort forth, right? When you always do things which are just according to your desires, then you have to put effort forth to get them, but it doesn't really produce the same kind of results, obviously. So I want a sandwich and I make the effort to go to the kitchen, make a sandwich or whatever, and I get what I want. That's that kind of effort. But like if you're sitting in meditation and for the whole hour you're maybe experiencing dullness, that's actually a kind of a challenge to awareness and almost like a partner or an assistant to help you to learn with this particular state of mind. So you come up to a difficulty in meditation. You feel restless or you feel dull, and then you just have to be with it for the hour. And you have to learn how to stay conscious and not attached to it and not try to get rid of it and remain aware and not get caught up into it and so on. And that's the work of developing the mind, isn't it? Developing patience, developing endurance, developing determination around these very ordinary and seemingly mundane things, like dullness on a hot day after a meal. But what the result of that is, then the human mind develops a capacity and a strength to be aware. Because not only is there awareness, there's also a redetermination. So like with dullness, you just have to keep coming back. Or with restlessness, you just have to say, be patient. So whatever it is, you develop a capacity both to be present, and then to be present in sustained and skillful ways around something that you might normally just react to, run away from, blame, distract, and so on. So a meditation where you feel dull, or you struggle through dullness for maybe an hour, you think, what was the point of that? Pointless. Well, sometimes it is pointless. It's better to go and get some sleep, admittedly. If you're really exhausted, then sure, you need to get some sleep. Or what's the point of like being in a hot room, sweaty hot room, right? Why not go have a popsicle or something, do something good? Well, just like being with discomfort for an hour. Not physically threatening discomfort, but just being with something which is not pleasant. Dave and I drove up in his nice truck and it's got air conditioning. Of course I turned it on. You know, why not? I'm just there. He's very generous. Pays the extra gas for the for the air conditioning. And then we took the canoe from here to the pine trees. We had the air conditioning on from there to there. So, you know, one has these little luxuries. But so why not, you know, why not always have that? Because you can't. You can't always have that. And so, like a meditation situation where you set up boundaries and limitations where you don't get up and go and you don't run away and you don't, well, there's no, this is the best air conditioning we could get for you. And then you're faced with very, actually, easy exercises of discomfort. Very easy exercises in boredom. Very easy exercises in restlessness. Or minor annoyances, right? They're not big things. They're very minor. But you can learn a lot from them, and you can develop a lot of the paramitas. So just, like, discomfort in the body. Sitting and trying and feeling like a painful knee or a painful back. And you don't want to hurt yourself. But just like discomfort, physical discomfort itself is something that we just have to learn to live with. It's just part of the curriculum, isn't it? So you have, like, you have an hour and you get certain kinds of discomfort. Well, how can I be aware of that without aversion or without anxiety? How can I just be aware of discomfort and not create a problem around it? And that's the exercise. So I know, in Thailand, when I... The hot season was brutal. It was just absolutely brutal. It was just very, very hot, and it just got increasingly hot until it got very, very wet, and then you had the monsoons. You know that from Sri Lanka, you know how that pattern goes. And the days were so long, these were so very, very long, and we sat on concrete floors, there were no cushions, so my bottom was younger than it was more enduring. But just you know, something so ordinary and so simple and repeated again and again and again would seem like, why do that? Why not do something exciting and interesting and fascinating? Well, I certainly craved it. I certainly wanted that. But stimulating the mind all the time, stimulation is fine. A good literature or good talk, a good discussion, a good dialogue or whatever, these can be good things and helpful things. But also there's a value in the neutral. You know, there's a value in the negative which isn't harmful. Put it that way. So I know, like, for those early experiences in Thailand, just sitting on a concrete floor, which is uncomfortable, and not having a meditative posture. You know, my knees were up here, so I hadn't really meditated much. And to be in a situation where I didn't know what really anyone was talking about, didn't know the language. So what do you have? All you have is your mind and what your mind is doing around this now. And there was no escape. The escape was disrobing, but I didn't really want it. I wanted to do this experiment. And so the sort of containment of meditation, like a 45 minutes or an hour or a half an hour, and those limitations, and then the difficulties which come up into that. It's just not wanting to do it, or falling asleep, or thinking, oh, I should answer my emails, or, you know, wanting to distract or whatever, gives you a really good opportunity to watch the mind which is restless or dull and not buy into it. To learn how to be aware of the mind which is distracted, but not buy into it, not follow it, not attach to it, and find a capacity to be peaceful in these very mundane situations. And that's a huge strength. That's a huge thing, because that same capacity to be aware, or to be patient, or to endure, or to bring up energy, that same capacity then clicks in when things get difficult, because that's what your mind is made of. It's not just that moment. It's your approach to that moment, isn't it? It's not just the particular difficulty you're facing. It's all the equipment and good karma and the parami that you built up to face that situation. And you can see that if you have a period of training the mind, which is very deliberate, every day or every morning, that strength just slowly builds. So meditation. Sometimes it's described as in very high terms of powerful insights and jhanas and sotapattianagamis, all these levels of, and you think, that's what I have to get. I have to get that. But also you have to just do the ordinary work. You just have to like develop the paramitas. So when we talk about developing the mind, sometimes the language in the literature is about attainment, which is very attractive, and then all the bliss of attainment, which is also very attractive, because we'd rather have bliss than boredom. So the mind gets very much kind of hooked on that, the goodies. But then the texts also talk about developing qualities of mind which are a foundation for enlightenment, such as patience, such as determination, such as friendliness, such as equanimity, such as truthfulness. And these are spectacular. How do you attain to patience? You don't. You do it. How do you? You know, it's not kind of dressed up in all kinds of beautiful flowery language. You have to be there and do it. And for me, much of Ajahn Chah's early recommendations and later recommendations to me were, you know, they're brilliant talks he gave, but often just his encouragement, just endure. You know, you haven't trained your mind. You've lived I'd lived a kind of pretty restless and traveling around the world and doing what young men do, but I hadn't really trained the mind. So when I got into the monastery, my mind was restless, and I go to him and say, "My mind's restless." And he says, "Well, what do you expect? You haven't trained the mind." And so he would just say, "Just endure." And that was actually very helpful. Just learn to be with the heat, be with the discomfort in the body. And of course, what the heat brought up and the discomfort in the body would brought up craving, the desire to not be there or to have some distraction. And because I could leave, but I chose not to, so nowhere I could go and there were no real distractions, I began to see craving in a very, very raw way. Just this kind of raw energy of not wanting to be here. And I couldn't really blame anyone because I'd done it to myself. Couldn't blame the other monks, they all seemed to be happy. You know, they're okay with it, or whether their own struggles. So there was nowhere to go but understand, oh, this is craving. Craving feels this way. Yeah? And then by just witnessing to craving around something which is very ordinary, you know, something you can really look at. It's not like overwhelming or powerful. It's something very ordinary, like waiting for the meditation to end. Just that. You know, just like sitting through for half an hour, and then, oh God, you know, start looking at the clock, it's 40 minutes, it's 41 minutes, it's 41 and a half minutes, and the time goes slow. Just that kind of craving. Just looking, this is craving. This is a feeling of not wanting to be here, wanting to be back in my kuti. And that, day in and day out, in monastic life, began to just see, oh, this is the feeling of discontent or craving. And then being able to witness that and be aware of it rather than judge it, distract it, get rid of it, you know, just be with it, just be with that sense of craving. And then of course after a while the craving loses power because the witnessing and awareness becomes stronger. Awareness becomes stronger. And craving is just more and more as an object. And then more and more one day, you know, it's still uncomfortable, it's still hot, and it's still long, but it's okay. It's peaceful. Why? Not that the conditions have changed, but the craving has abated. And that's the secret of freedom. It's not that you have to change the conditions. You can change the conditions if you want. If you can, that's fine. It's not immoral to get air conditioning in your car or something. But the real freedom of the mind is the cessation of craving. And you can see... You can see that in little ways where I think all of us have that, where there have been times in our lives where we have reacted, right? Like we've gotten upset or fearful or angry, and then we practice and all of a sudden it's the same situation but we're not reacting. That's wonderful, isn't it? And that's a kind of freedom which isn't manipulated. It comes from the heart being liberated more and more from craving. Liberated from that. Why? By how? By witnessing with awareness. So the difficulties that we get in our meditation practice in our life are really, if we can make them conscious, they are the aids for developing the paramitas. So that thing in your life, that person in your life, that situation in your life which you find annoying, is a chance to look at craving. I don't want this person to be this way. I want them to be different. And just to look at that sense of friction with someone and just witness to it until you come to a peaceful resolution. Not that you like the person. You don't have to like the person. You know, you still might find them, you know, marginally sort of irritating, whatever, but you don't attach to that. It's just weather. It's not a problem. And that's wonderful. That's wonderful, because your heart has a center of stillness which is not dependent on the conditions. It's not dependent on the people or the heat or the coolness. You know, it has its own independence and it has its own freedom. And that takes training. I don't think any of us can do that. I'll, you know, just one day come to a monastery and say, okay, now I feel free. It takes work. It's a lot of work, isn't it? But I think this kind of work gives meaning to things like friction, to things like traffic jams or irritable people, irritating people. It gives meaning to it because it is a chance to develop the mind in a good way. That's wonderful. A meaning to the annoying parts of life. Huh? There's also all those parts of life which are very beautiful, very connecting. The compassion we feel for others, the joy we feel, that, like, I think a lot of us have been experiencing a lot of joy for Ayameta Nandi's new vihara. I was there on Thursday, and it's a really neat little house. And it's been many years since she's had a place, as it were. And so there are those heart experiences where we feel really connected with life, where we are where our sense of self falls away, and we have like joy for Sister Maita Nandi's goodness and for Kathy joining her. These are wonderful things. So sometimes in life we feel very connected. Our egos fall away, and the compassionate heart and the joyful connection to other people's goodness is just there, right? And that's wonderful. And those we try to encourage. But we're not always there, are we? Because sometimes another person's success intimidates us, or makes us feel jealous, or someone else's sickness, we don't have compassion, we have worry and fear, or someone irritates us. Now, in one of the ways we talk about Four Noble Truths in this modern culture, I think, is that, you know, usually you say suffering, cause of suffering, end of suffering, the path. Well, if we use this word alienation is a word which is used a lot now, isn't it, for suffering. So alienation, the cause of alienation, the cessation of alienation, and the path which leads to cessation of alienation. And then connection, say. So when we have joy and happiness for another person's success, that's connection. Because there's no ego, there's no sense of self there. Or another person's, we have compassion for their suffering. But when we feel irritated, annoyed, self-conscious, self-disparaging, all those are forms of suffering or alienation. I don't feel connected. I feel confused, or I want to reject that person, or whatever. Now, what's very important is to actually connect to those feelings. So when I feel, like if you feel dullness, right? If you feel dullness in a sitting, what happens? You lose the present moment. You become alienated from the present moment. You're not with the present moment because your mind goes off. Our friend just woke up now from a nice snooze in the wall. He was alienated from the moment. He wasn't here. He was sleeping. Right? That's alienation. You're not with the present moment. So somehow we have to connect to the present moment and then watch how this alienation takes place. So he came off the wall very wisely, right, and came into the present moment. He awoke. Now, if he falls asleep again, his task is to stay present. To stay present. Now, the easy thing is to kind of start to do this again, and I'll throw my cup at you if you do that again. But that's what happens. We don't know how to stay present. We don't know how to, we abstract into thought. That's what we do. So whether it's dullness, right, or whether it's anger, or whether it's self-hatred, or whether it's fear, we go off into thinking. We are no longer connected to these alienated kinds of suffering that we have. And the task in mindfulness is to stay connected to your suffering. To stay connected to your suffering. To stay connected to the fear, to stay connected to the annoyance, to stay connected to the dullness. So the dullness comes, what does it feel like? And you try to keep there, you try to stay there. The irritation comes, and you the mind wants to go off and blame the person, or blame yourself. It goes off into thought, and we're no longer aware. We're off into all kinds of sakkaya ditti, self-view, I-making, my-making, ahankara, mimankara, all that kind of language. So staying connected to suffering is hard because we want to blame, we want to run away. So what we try to do in Buddhist practice is stay connected to the body, stay connected to the energy. Say if you are like feeling dull or restless and your mind goes off into thought, you're not connected to the body anymore. You're not connected to the present moment. If you feel very self-critical, you know, you're kind of really down on yourself, you'll just be in thought. You won't be connected to your body. But if you feel like self-criticism or fear, if you really feel it viscerally, you'll see it's a kind of energy. It's a kind of tension. And dullness is a kind of porridge in the mind, isn't it? Your energy is kind of up in the head. Now if you can stay connected to that and stay aware of that, then the energy will normalize. If I feel, let's say, like in public speaking for me became a very good aid in looking at fear, terror, anxiety, all those modes of self-consciousness that I suffered from for many years. All of a sudden, public speaking, it became a really good way to look at fear, because I was always afraid. And so I would try to think my way out of the fear. So then I would plan talks, and then I'd forget the talks. Or, you know, I did everything except that you just stay with the fear, stay with the anxiety. And I said, no, you just have to stay with it. So the talk would be, you know, there'd be a talk I'd have to give, and my mind would start to, I'd get nervous and anxious, and then I'd stay with the body, stay with the body, stay with the body. And then the anxiety would be there, but then I'd start to give the talk and it'd be okay. And that was a really good development in my own spiritual life, because one, it helped me to develop awareness around something which I tended to get overwhelmed by. So the very thing that caused me suffering was the very thing that caused me to awaken, right? The very thing that puts you to sleep is the very thing which will you have to awaken to. Right? So this is what I mean by partners and aids in awakening. The very thing that caused you dukkha also is the thing that wakes you up. And so, say with the body then, with the body, with something like all of us have experienced anxiety and fear, if you just stay with it in your guts and in your heart, and you just keep breathing and relaxing, and it starts to tense you up and take you to thought, if you just stay with it there, it finds its own kind of balance, and the tension of that is released, and you can function, and the mind is not caught by that, it's not attached to that. And mindfulness is stronger, and the tendency towards fear is weakened because you've looked at it as energy. Whereas before that, I thought, well, if I didn't have any fear, I'd be happy. Well, of course, you know, of course you'd be happy. But how do you get past there? How do you go from a mind which habitually gets very judgmental and critical of others, or a mind which habitually falls asleep, or a mind which habitually goes into self-hatred? How do you get from that mind to a mind which is peaceful? Well, you have to develop awareness around it and non-attachment to it. And the non-attachment is not believing in the thoughts, not believing in the narratives, not believing in the I-making, my-making, knowing it as an energy, as a condition, which is anicca, dukkha, anatta, which arises, hangs in for a while, and then ceases. And it's not you. It's not yours. And when we take things into thought, then we make it ours. So when I would have fear about talks, not only was there fear, there was also me. And what am I going to say? And what am I going to do? And so there was anxiety. And that's the attachment. So the practice of awareness then is like it takes on the difficulties and it develops these good qualities of steadiness and perseverance around those very things which tend to cause me suffering, which tend to overwhelm me. And isn't it a wonderful thing when the very thing which caused you suffering, you one day see more and more clearly, you don't attach to it, and you find freedom around it? Isn't it the most kind of wonderful thing you can get as a human being? Because it's wonderful to connect to people with joy, and it's wonderful to feel love and compassion, but it's also wonderful to find the mind which is free of those very things that might have plagued you for how many years? So I think that approach to our contemplative life, that approach where you really go towards those things as a challenge that tend to throw you off, as the thing which will help you find balance. And that's what Ajahn Chah was always saying. You know, he'd say, in Thailand, the forest monks, they have this line, Toraman Kileit, torture your defilements. So for me, giving public talk, you know, public speaking was a torture of my defilement, because my defilement was run away, be a hermit, you know, run away from this, the, you know, giving talks. And so torturing the defilement was no defilement, you know, you're gonna have to be there. And Ajahn Chah would say to us, well, you always want to, I always talk about this, we carry water from the wells in these big buckets on a pole, on a bamboo pole. We go to the wells, we haul up the water from the wells, and then we'd have a couple of big buckets that we'd put through a bamboo pole, and then we carry the poles on our shoulders, two monks, two buckets, and we carry the water to the toilets and to our kuntis. And Ajahn Chah would say, why do you always just carry the bucket with the people you like? Why don't you carry bucket with the people you dislike? And he said, torture your kilesa, like don't just take the easy path, don't practice self-mortification, but why don't you carry the bucket with the guy you dislike? And I didn't like carrying the bucket with the older monks because they were so slow, and I didn't like it when they were in front of me. So then I'd do that. I'd kind of find an older monk who was slower, and I was kind of really restless, and just watch him to push this monk, go faster. And then, you know, you kind of watch this restlessness in the heart, and then, this is what restlessness feels like. This is wanting this guy to go more quickly. This is what that feels like. So you kind of, in a very healthy way, you're challenging the defilements of mind. Not in a way to hurt yourself, you know, not in that kind of way, but you're really challenging and looking at that. And so you find that, like, in monastic life, monks will, during the range retreat, they'll kind of give something up. Give up emails for the nowadays it's a modern renunciation, or in Thailand was you'd give up something like sugar. Well, that doesn't sound like much in this culture, but in Thailand, in some of the monasteries, you'd get this sugary drink every evening, and that was the only tidbit that the senses would really have. So you'd have the meal and this awful sugary drink in the evening. Now, giving up that sugary drink was kind of giving up a lot of your sense stimulation, you know, because there was nothing much going on. And so, you know, monk would make maybe, okay, I'm gonna torture my defilement by not taking the sugary drink. And then you'd make it more difficult, and you'd go to the tea session. So you would stay in your kuti, go to the tea session, and you'd watch the stupid decision you'd made to give up the sugary drink. And the first thing you think, that was a dumb thing to do. 3 months of this, or whatever. And you watch your mind kind of think, I don't really need it anyway. I didn't really want it. But then, because it was such an ordinary thing to do, and no big deal, you'd have to develop, like, no, you stick with your determination. And you watch craving, and it was a kind of neat experiment around something very, very ordinary, and you learn something about yourself. So we, in monastic life, we try to use boundaries, like a meditation sitting, or our rules, or not eating in the afternoon. We, you know, got a very simple boundaries, which don't hurt you, which don't harm you, but limit the amount of sense distraction we have. And then within those limitations, we see, okay, where's the suffering, where's the craving, and how can I be at peace with this? And then your heart discovers more and more the place of peace is here rather than out there. So whether it's a hot meditation hall, or whether it's a person that slightly annoys you in the monastery or in life in general, they're all partners in developing the paramitas. They're all kind of your assistants in helping you develop a path where you really become self-sufficient and independent of the sense experience. One of the things I've noticed with my mom is that I've had a very kind of interesting reflection on noticing how an elderly person, if they don't have any sense stimulation, get very down, get very depressed. Right? So like with my mom, like the winter was brutal for her, because it was dark and couldn't get out, and you know, nothing to look at, and then the springtime comes and there's the light and flowers, and she can get out on the balcony and she can feel the sun. You just feel the sun in her body and move her body around a bit in the balcony and hear the birds, because she has a hearing aid now. She's always going, "Whoa, look at, listen to that bird," and this whole being comes alive with sense stimulation, right? So we are sense beings, and sense consciousness can be very up enlivening that way. And now I'm also reading a book by a psychiatrist called Gabor Maté. I was talking to Dave about that. Gabor Maté is a psychiatrist in Vancouver who works in a place called the Portland Hotel, which is run by a charity that tries to give housing to addicts, to people who are really, really down and out. And Gabor Maté's worked there for 10 years. And he works with the worst kind of addictions. And their whole philosophy is not to try to convert these people, it's just to treat their medical problems. And they have profound medical problems. And most of them, in the reading of this book, most of them seem to have been brutally abused as children. So their histories are so awful that, as Gabor Maté says in his book, they self-medicate by using cocaine or using heroin because their memories and their pain is so awful that they can't be sober. It's just too difficult for them. It's just so awful. So they use, you know, contrast that to my mother, they use sense experience to obliterate memory, to find some place where there is no suffering. And you can't blame them for that. But you can see how we can engage in sense experience in ways which are very skillful. So my mother, being with the herbs, smelling the basil, or the mint, or the rosemary, is actually very good for her. It really lifts her consciousness. And yet these folk in Vancouver, who've had these awful, awful histories, and you can see how in some sense it helps them forget, but their minds are just so trapped in these awful cycles of addiction. And it's awful. Their eyes are very, very difficult. So our relationship to the sense world is varied. Now sometimes we use the sense experience in a very distracting way. We feel bored and we just use things to distract the mind. But sometimes we use sense experience, which is in a very, very skillful way. So like we can use chanting, you know, to uplift the mind, gathas. We can use imagery, like a Buddha image, to calm the mind. We can't as monks, but lay people can use music to calm the mind, or music to excite the mind, right? So the way we relate to sense experience, it depends a lot. But what's interesting in meditation is we just take this sense experience, sitting in a room, neutral kind of situation, not harmful, but uncomfortable. You take a very neutral experience, and rather than going out into the sense experience, you try to stay with this sense experience and watch craving. And that's a bit different. All have their relevance. Sometimes people use it for distraction, sense experience. Sometimes to enliven the mind, which is good. But to actually just take something neutral and try to stay mindful within the neutrality of that is a very interesting exercise, because it's not, the sense experience isn't very attractive. So you easily fall asleep, you easily go off into thought. So you have to bring up your own energy to stay here with the object of meditation, with the posture. And that's very good, because that comes from a place of non-craving. If someone is listening to a very attractive piece of music, the sense, you know, it's sensually very attractive, it can be very good, it can be calming, but it's easy to do because it's attractive, right? But something which is very neutral, like the breath, the posture, that is very neutral, so that's more difficult to do. You have to bring up energy, vitality, to stay with the object of meditation. But you have to do it in a way which is calming. So it's a challenge, it's a training. And that's what's one of the things we're trying to do. And that kind of training then conditions you or creates the factors, the paramitas, the skills and strengths of mind, which then become active in ordinary life. So it's not just about the meditation, it's about your mind. Your mind becomes skillful, your mind becomes stronger, your mind becomes more settled and grounded, and all kinds of good factors like that. So it might seem like not much to sit for 45 minutes in a hot room, but it is much, because it's difficult. It's difficult to stay here, difficult to do that. But that's how you build the paramitas, that's how you build a foundation for enlightenment. Okay, I'll leave that for contemplation.